That was University Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A nationwide ceasefire is in effect in Syria, a complicated arrangement worked out last week by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Russian counterpart, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Kerry met with reporters Monday in Washington and said initial reports suggest the truce is working.
The earliest reports are that there's some reduction in violence, though it is far too early to draw any definitive conclusions.
The agreement aimed at allowing humanitarian aid into the besieged and divided city Aleppo, eventual joint U.S.-Russian cooperation in targeting jihadist groups, and hope for resumption of talks on Syria's political future.
This is designed to bring people to the table in Geneva in order to get under the auspices of the UN and begin to negotiate a political transition and the restoration of a peaceful and united Syria.
Rebels seeking to oust President Bashar al-Assad have expressed reservations, saying like an earlier doomed cessation of hostilities, the agreement lacks guarantees and monitoring mechanisms. Following a two-year investigation, the group The Sentry, created to look into how African conflicts are funded, claims to have found evidence that South Sudanese leaders profited off the country's conflict. Hollywood actor George Clooney presented a report Monday at a Washington news conference.
It involves arms dealers, international lawyers, international banks, international real estate. And it is because of these international actors that we are also able to provide solutions to help end this criminal behavior, to protect innocent civilians.
He called on the international community to cut off financial flows to President Salva Kiir, rebel leader Riek Machar, and the country's top generals through tough sanctions. Spokesmen for both leaders deny they hold property in Kenya or any other African country. This is VOA News. U.S. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton Monday said she could resume campaigning in a couple of days after aides said she suffered from pneumonia. That caused cancellation of a California fundraiser and an early exit from anniversary commemoration Sunday of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Clinton's doctor gave her antibiotics and advised the former Secretary of State to rest and modify her schedule. Michael Cornfield is an associate professor of political management at George Washington University.
Hillary Clinton had a bad week, and if there are serious health problems, that obviously affects the race, and all of us in our heads are spinning scenarios of what might happen if she were unfortunately seriously incapacitated.
Her Republican opponent, businessman Donald Trump, wished her well. The 70-year-old Trump said he plans to release results of a physical examination he had during the past week with specific numbers. In the former Soviet Republic of Belarus, the opposition won two parliamentary seats in Sunday's election, the first time that's occurred since 2008. The Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe monitored the ballot. Official Kent Harstad said there were some efforts to make the vote more transparent, but there were also shortcomings.
We have found through our observations that in some instances we've seen some progress, but on other places it remained the same or equally bad as before.
Election monitors complained of being kicked out of voting sites, reported inflated voting turnout numbers, and said prisoners, along with patients in mental hospitals, were allowed to cast ballots in large numbers. Belarus has been run by strongman Alexander Lukashenko since 1994. The U.S. Tuesday sent two nuclear-capable bombers across the skies of South Korea. The B-1 bombers, escorted by U.S. and South Korean fighter planes, completed their mission just 4 days after North Korea conducted its fifth and largest nuclear test in violation of U.N. sanctions. The Guam-based bombers conducted a low-altitude flight over Osan Air Base near the heavily armed demilitarized zone. Meanwhile, the U.N. said flooding from heavy rains in North Korea has killed more than 130 people, with nearly 400 missing and more than 100,000 having to flee their homes in the country's northernmost province. Homes, schools, and other buildings have been destroyed, 140,000 said to be in need of urgent assistance. An opposition delegation in Democratic Republic of Congo walked out of a national dialogue Monday, which they called a dead end aimed at averting a political crisis over the upcoming election and future of President Joseph Kabila. He is constitutionally barred from seeking to stay in office, and his current term expires in December. Most opposition parties had boycotted the talks. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September the 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan president and his former vice president are accused of stealing their country's wealth for personal gains.
The simple fact is they're stealing the money to fund their militias to attack and kill one another. The evidence is thorough, it is detailed, and it is irrefutable.
That's actor George Clooney speaking Tuesday during the presentation of a report about South Sudan leaders profiting from war. A group of Gabonese protesters want President Barack Obama to make good on his promise to support democracy in Africa. Zimbabweans are set for a protest for and against President Robert Mugabe at the United Nations this week. And DRC opposition walks out of election talks with President Kabila's government.
This is the first time the opposition party members, who make up about one-third of the 285 people taking part, have suspended their participation en masse.
That's VOA correspondent Nick Long in Kinshasa. Zimbabwe denies charges of partisan food aid distribution, and scientists warn that the lack of confidence in vaccines can cause disease outbreaks. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A human rights group says it has found evidence of huge war profiteering by some of South Sudan's top political leaders. The group's 65-page report entitled War Crimes Shouldn't Pay says South Sudan's nearly three-year-old conflict has been fueled by battles over control of state assets and the country's natural resources. The report by the group called The Century accused President Salva Kiir, former First Vice President Riek Machar, and South Sudanese generals of stealing millions of dollars from state coffers since 2005. The group's co-founders, Hollywood star George Clooney and activist John Prendergast, shared their findings on Monday at a news conference at the National Press Club.
This morning, we're prepared to give evidence of massive criminal behavior by the president of South Sudan and by his opposition, the ousted vice president of South Sudan and their generals. The simple fact is they're stealing the money to fund their militias to attack and kill one another. The evidence is thorough, it is detailed, and it is irrefutable. It involves arms dealers, international lawyers, international banks, international real estate. And it is because of these international actors that we are also able to provide solutions to help end this criminal behavior to protect innocent civilians. Since 2014, the U.S. has given $1.5 billion in aid to South Sudan. The United States and the world recognizes that South Sudan cannot become a failed state, not simply because of the humanitarian crisis, but also because we have seen the influences that can take hold in a failed state. We can either take action now or we can spend the next decade mopping up the mess.
That's actor George Clooney speaking Monday in Washington. Activist John Prendergast urged the United States and other governments around the world to stop the stolen money from moving through the international financial system.
Unfortunately, in South Sudan today, war crimes actually do pay. South Sudan leaders no longer take seriously the threats made by the United Nations, by the United States, and others to impose consequences for their behavior. South Sudan's leaders have learned that rape as a war weapon, child soldier recruitment, and mass killings are not enough to trigger any meaningful accountability measures. What's missing is international leverage. And so we consulted widely with banking and finance and policy experts, and we're proposing a new approach to creating immediate and we think unprecedented leverage to counter mass atrocities being committed in South Sudan. We're proposing to combine anti-money laundering measures with targeted sanctions focused on the top leaders, accompanied by robust enforcement. And that's the message that Don and George and I are going to bring to President Obama today.
That's human rights activist John Prendergast speaking Monday in Washington during the presentation of a report on South Sudan. Opposition parties walked out of talks on election in the Democratic Republic of Congo on Monday, saying their position on the order in which presidential and local elections should be held is not negotiable. A spokesman for the ruling coalition said the walkout is a negotiating tactic and the talks are not over. Nick Long has more from the DRC capital, Kinshasa.
The talks began September the 1st, and this is the first time the opposition party members, who make up about one-third of the 285 people taking part, have suspended their participation en masse. Only a few of the country's dozens of opposition parties have been taking part in the dialogue anyway, so it is questionable whether any agreement reached here could overcome the obstacles to elections. But even this minority group now says it cannot agree with the proposal by the ruling coalition that the country should vote in local elections before the presidential poll. The leading opposition spokesman at the dialogue, Vital Kamerhe, told the media why his group is insisting that the presidential elections must be held first.
L'élection contraignante pour laquelle le calendrier clair dans la Constitution, c'est l'élection présidentielle. Toutes les élections sont constitutionnelles. Nous n'en disconvenons pas. Mais l'élection où les délais fixés...
He says the binding election for which the timetable is clear in the Constitution is for president. All the elections, local, provincial and national, are constitutional, he says, but there's a fixed timetable for the presidential election in order to avoid a national crisis. Kamerhe also suggested local elections could take a long time to organise.
La majorité vient nous proposer qu'on commence par les élections locales. Mais avec la situation des...
The majority proposed holding local elections first, he says. But since the decentralization, we now have some districts that overlap and others that have no population. How long will it take to sort that out? Last year, the government went ahead with the decentralization program, more than doubling the number of provinces from 11 to 26. The spokesman for the ruling coalition, Emmanuel Shadary, played down the disagreement.
Ils ont dit, ils suspendaient leur participation. Ce n'est pas que le dialogue a pris fin. Ce n'est pas qu'ils sont pas du dialogue.
He says the opposition has said it's suspending its participation, but the dialogue is not over, and the opposition has not left the dialogue. It's a negotiating tactic, he adds. There are other groups at the dialogue drawn from civil society organisations such as churches, trade unions, non-governmental organisations and traditional chiefs. There are also senior politicians and others. According to Shadary, most of these groups support the proposal that local elections be held before presidential elections. The African Union-appointed facilitator of the dialogue, Edem Kodjo, said Monday after the opposition walkout that talks have already started between the stakeholders to create conditions for a resumption of the work in committees. Observers said the dialogue is likely to continue Tuesday. Nick Long for VOA News, Kinshasa.
A group of Gabonese living in the United States have called on President Barack Obama to make good his promise to support democracy in Africa. During a protest in front of the White House over the weekend, they called on President Obama to stand with the Gabonese people in their claim that opposition leader Jean Ping won the August 27 presidential election. But the Election Commission said President Ali Bongo won re-election with 49.8% of the vote, while Ping had 48.23%. Ping has asked the Gabonese Constitutional Court to review the results of the election, particularly those from President Ali Bongo's home province of Hautogoué. Frank Jacquetin is a Gabonese human rights and pro-democracy activist. He says it is time for the world to know what the Gabonese people have been experiencing for the past 50 years.
I believe that there should be an international inquiry, because the problem in Gabon is that all our institutions are being hijacked by one family and their friends, which is Ali Bongo and his ally. There's a lot of people who have been killed, people who have been arrested, and also there's some families who are looking for their loved ones. Until now that I'm speaking to you, they don't even know where they are. So in order for us to know the truth of really what happened, I am 100% with the civil society in Gabon that an inquiry, an international inquiry, must come to Gabon to investigate exactly what transpired.
Let me say that President Bongo last week said that the violence that took place, he had nothing to do with it. In fact, he blamed Jean Ping's campaign for being responsible for the violence.
What is interesting with that statement is that people in Gabon do not own a weapon. So I don't understand the logic of Ali Bongo. But what I do know is that in the middle of the night, a helicopter came into the headquarters of Jean Ping and heavily armed men came into this compound and started shooting at the people.
Gabonese in the diaspora had a demonstration in front of the White House. What was the purpose of that demonstration?
We went to the White House because Barack Obama, when he was elected in 2008, he said to the whole world that he will be on the side of people who are demanding democracy or people who want freedom, that people who want freedom, they will find an ally in his administration. So we came to Washington to remind him of his own promises, and we are hoping that Barack Obama will be on the side of the Gabonese people.
I know Mr. Jinping has taken his challenge to the Supreme Court. Do you agree with that? And do you expect anything will come out of that?
I do agree in principle with that because that's the law. But I don't expect anything good from the court because from the past, the court always has been swaying on the side of Ali Bongo and his family. So I don't expect anything positive coming out of there. But this time is different because the United States and Europe and France and the United Nations and probably the African Union will also watch very closely in what's going on at the Supreme Court. So I think it will be a good way for us to show the whole world how our system is corrupt and how our system is not serving the people, but it's serving a person, it's serving a family and his allies.
You talk about President Obama. What would you like for the African Union and the rest of the international community to do in terms of what's happening in Gabon?
I'm saying that I want the United Nations, the African Union, all those international organizations to actually sway the Supreme Court so the Supreme Court can speak the truth and speak the law. So in other words, whatever transpire from the ballots, that's what we want to be reflected. So whoever the Gabonese people elected as a president, that's the person that we want as the president of Gabon.
Frank Joctin is the Gabonese human rights and pro-democracy activist. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 13th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Banga FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. Supporters of President Robert Mugabe and his opponents are set to clash in New York this Saturday, while the 92-year-old Zimbabwean leader is attending the United Nations General Assembly. Mr. Mugabe's allies, the December 12 movement, says it will organize a counter-protest to the one being proposed by Pastor Evan Mawerere's This Flag Movement, in which wants the government to address serious social, economic, and political problems facing the Zimbabwean people. Omowale Clay, spokesperson for the December 12 movement, tells reporter Chioneso Jani of VOA Studio 7 program that they are ready to challenge the anti-Mugabe protesters.
The demonstration that's taking place Saturday, September 17th, is a demonstration of continued support of the valiant effort of Zimbabwe to be self-determining and their right to be self-determining. And at the same time, outrage at those forces who are being manipulated and whose self-interest it is to try to undermine the government while it is going under the most difficult economic time as any developing country would go under if it is the target of Western sanctions and Western efforts for regime change. So we're Pan-African, and we understand that an attack against Africans in one part of the world is an attack against Africans in any part of the world.
There are protests happening in Zimbabwe every day, and these are the voices of the people that you are here to support who are saying that enough is enough. What can you say about that?
Chichi, I say we've had enough of an African country struggling to develop and the West trying to short-circuit that and undermine the democratic structures and institutions in those countries because they don't like the government. I understand, believe me, the Zimbabwean people have chosen a different direction that the West is trying to tighten the screws against them. Now, these social media groups, this flag, that flag, this flag, there's one flag. There's a Zimbabwean flag. And it was no flag until the liberation movement liberated Zimbabwe from the treachery and murder and brutality of Rhodesia. These efforts right now about protest, I have not heard a word, Chi-Chi, about the question of sanctions. The same group who are saying Zimbabweans are suffering direct none of that attention to the source of cutting off foreign trade, to the source of cutting off medical supplies. They raise corruption. Mugabe was right for the land reclamation programs, not because they came out of simply his genius, but because they represented the aspiration of African people to be whole people. And so Mugabe is right is a slogan of the 21st century. Mugabe is right is not a personal, private thing. It's a political and visionary thing. Because when you talk about Mugabe in the world today, you talk about the right to reclaim.
That was Omowale Clay, spokesperson for the December 12th movement, a pro-Mugabe group based in New York City. He was speaking with reporter Chiona Sojane of VOA Studio 7 program. Meanwhile, Tamburai Guiquerre, a member of the opposition movement for democratic change, a former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, says his group is also ready for protest against President Mugabe.
This situation where they are now going to be at the UN demo and demonstrating, it is nothing new. They've always done that. And this time, because Zimbabweans have gone into this mode where we're going to have more people demonstrating, definitely, that's definitely going to happen. In the years that have gone past at the UN General Assembly, you've had one or two protesters from the MDC taking part in these demonstrations. But now, because of this flag and the consciousness that has been awakened in the people, the demo is definitely going to be different this year. More people have indicated that they're going to be turning up. So that would definitely solicit a response from the December 12th movement, because they're not going to have the numbers on their side. They're going to be more Zimbabweans.
Are you, as hashtag this flag Tajamuka, prepared for on one-on-one with them, since it's going to be at the same place?
I actually believe it will be a good thing to have as many Zimbabweans as we can at that stage and having us to meet them, because they obviously, some way I believe, have this ideology of Mugabe, the old Mugabe who went to war, who did so much for us as Africans. I believe don't have the truth and the understanding of the Mugabe now. The Mugabe who is in charge of a country that is going down, a country where there's so much brutality. So if they see as many of us come out there, I hope that will get them to begin to question themselves. What are we saying here? Why do we have so many of these Zimbabweans here saying Mugabe must go when we think Mugabe is like this? But I just hope and pray that they will be conscientized by seeing so many Zimbabweans. They have to go back and look at what they have been saying and what they have been believing and begin to think about Zimbabwe now, Mugabe now. Not the Mugabe who led the revolution into Zimbabwe. No, the Mugabe now who is 36 years in power and has been and is doing what is going on now.
That was Tamburai Guiquerre, a member of the MDCT USA province, speaking with reporter Chiones Ajane of VOA Studio 7 program. In Zimbabwe, a human rights report says the government is giving food aid to supporters and withholding aid from opponents. A coalition of aid groups has voiced concern about the report, while the government has denied the allegations. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Last week, the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission said it found evidence of political bias in the distribution of relief aid by the government. Areas that supported the ruling ZANU-PF party were getting food, it said, while areas that support opposition parties were not. The Minister of Social Welfare denied the allegations Monday as, quote, unsubstantiated and seemingly malicious, unquote. It said the charges denigrate a program that has the, quote, keen interest, unquote, of President Robert Mugabe. During the weekend, the 92-year-old leader weighed in on the issue.
The information which some stupid people and stupid spokesmen of, is it human rights, have put out to say grain is being distributed along party lines is completely false, absolutely false.
He added that Human Rights Commission Chairman Elisto Mugwadi had been influenced by Western countries who he said sponsor the commission. Early this year, Zimbabwe made a plea for assistance to feed more than 4 million people, nearly a third of the population, after a severe drought reduced the harvest. Oxfam's director in Zimbabwe, Machinda Marongwe, says his aid agents, quote, was deeply concerned, unquote, with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission findings. He called for aid to be distributed according to principles of humanity, neutrality, and impartiality. A coalition of more than 20 NGOs said it welcomed the, quote, bold and timely intervention, unquote, by the Human Rights Commission and called on the government to refrain from manipulating food aid as a way of gaining political support before Zimbabwe's next elections in 2018. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Public mistrust of vaccines is causing the outbreak of diseases like measles. According to researchers, a joint study by researchers in London and Singapore found big variations in the level of public confidence in the importance, safety, and effectiveness of vaccines. Henry Richwell reports.
Health workers in the Democratic Republic of Congo walk the streets of Kinshasa, calling on the public to attend a yellow fever vaccination program. An outbreak of the disease has hit the DRC and Angola this year, killing hundreds of people. The World Health Organization aims to vaccinate over 15 million people in both countries.
If everyone agrees to be vaccinated, we can eradicate yellow fever from our country.
Figures from a London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine study show that people in the Africa region have high confidence in the safety of vaccines relative to other parts of the world, with just 7.4% of respondents believing vaccinations are unsafe, second only to Southeast Asia. In Europe, the figure is 15.8%, driven largely by France, where 41% of the population questions the safety of vaccines.
Anxieties about links between hepatitis B and multiple sclerosis several years ago, scientifically deemed unlinked but still caused anxiety. There still is today and has been concerns about side effects related to the HPV vaccine. Again, not scientifically confirmed, but anxieties about that.
Mistrust in France was also driven by the response to the H1N1 flu outbreak fears in 2009, when the government spent $1.4 billion on 94 million doses of the vaccine. The majority were sold off or destroyed. Dr. Larson fears the consequences of that mistrust.
We will get some combination of influenza strains that will be very fatal. And if we have such poor compliance with a pandemic vaccine in future, I would be very worried about that.
Researchers warn that decreases in confidence can lead to people refusing vaccines, which in turn can trigger disease outbreaks. But the study found a high level of global support for vaccinating children against disease. Henry Rutwell for VOA News, London.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A human rights group says it has found evidence of huge war profiteering by some of South Sudan's top political leaders, including the heads of the two sides in the country's civil war. And that's it for this Tuesday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very nice day.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth one-on-one conversation with Namibian president. The wide-ranging discussion will include the president's vision for the future of the Southern African nation. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it?
We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.
Right here.